Okay. Good morning, everyone. We'll start. Welcome to week three of Foundational Principles. I'm just sitting at my window and here it's starting to rain quite a bit now. So it's a good thing everyone's in comfort of the home and not to worry about getting wet. So we're going through this course called Foundational Principles based on the book called The Witness by Ariel Berger. Lessons from Elie Wiesel's classroom. Just for those who might just not be familiar, as we've done the last few weeks, here's the book. It's available but gold, apparently. The book has seven chapters, seven concepts. I hope you can hear me with the rain outside, but anyways. Seven concepts. We did memory and otherness. Today we're going to do quite a complex topic, faith and doubt. And then we'll go through all seven over the weeks. So before we get into today's topic, I want to just give a very short, quick review of last week. Last week we talked about otherness. Elie Wiesel said it's the otherness of the other that fascinates me. And we talked about Adam and Eve, where Adam and Eve were created in a way where when God created the first relationship and Eve was created after Adam, it says that she was an ezer kenegdo. She was a support, but she was opposite. Because as we explained last week, the depth of any relationship is indifference. We're essentially all the same because we all have the imprint of Tzelem Elokim, the imprint of God, the divine seal. But we express it in so many different ways. And the depth of any relationship actually comes from our differences and expanding and learning from others and growing from the otherness in the other. We discussed last week how this is much easier when people share values, at least. It's still difficult and it's still very hard to embrace the difference of how those values have been expressed. But when there's conflicting values, it's more difficult. We explain values are very important. Values have to be defended. So sometimes you have to defend your values and also maybe even want to inspire others with your values. But we still have to do it with absolutely no judgment. We still have to do it with a tremendous learning from the other and no feeling of superiority. And of course, there's still so much about the other person that we can learn from and we can really grow from. Okay, so at the end, we ended with that otherness is not just learning from the other, but it's even when we give to the other, we have to give to the otherness in the other. In other words, what they need. I told you that story about the Seder in Lakewood. We have to give to the way people understanding their needs, their perspective, what will be good for them, and so on and so forth. Okay. So today we, as I said, we go into a topic called faith and doubt, which is the next chapter. It's a very difficult, actually, and complex topic, but one that's fundamentally important. And to do that, I want to sort of go through I'm going to stop this in a second, for a minute. I want to go through a few very general introductions before we actually get into the book. The first is that one of the discussions that we're going to be having today is, or we need to have in the context of this topic, is the definition of faith. What does it actually mean? Emunah, we call it in Hebrew. What's the definition? What is it? And we're going to do that soon. The second, we just need to lay it down straight at the beginning that, of course, tragedy or any challenge for that matter often weakens or challenges faith. Now, that's been throughout history, that's been a true fact. But of course, on a global, and it's true individually for different people, but on a global and communal level, that's so true when it comes to the Shoah, so true when it comes to the Holocaust. And one of the themes, generally, in the writings of Elie Wiesel, is his personal struggle, right? His personal struggle with faith after the Holocaust, after what he went through. Now, the most important thing, of course, when we read these things and we talk and we see people who struggle with faith, either because of individual challenge or tragedy or because of suffering or because of nationhood suffering or the Holocaust, something like that, obviously, the first thing is, God forbid, never to judge on any level. I consider myself a person of emunah, a person of faith, at least I try to be as much as I can, but I also try never to judge because I don't know what I would be in those circumstances. I don't know how I would respond and how strong my faith would endure the test of those types of experiences. So I do know that those type of experiences, different people have responded differently. We'll talk about it a bit later. There are so many people coming out of the Shoah, coming out of the Holocaust, or any suffering or challenge differently. Some become stronger in their faith. Some express it in amazing ways. Some struggle. And that's fine, but it makes for good discussion. But of course, we need to do that. And obviously, in the course of the discussion, I'm going to advocate strengthening of our faith, strengthening of our emunah, but with zero judgment to those who struggle with that and perhaps their faith has been weakened. So I just want to make that very clear at the very beginning. The third introduction I want to give is that the concept of faith, emunah, does not mean that there's no questions. Questions and emunah can coexist. Not only that, as we're going to say later, we'll explain later, emunah lives, can coexist, and in fact can even become deeper or more revealed through questions. Right? I think I've told you the story before of the great Hasidic rabbi called the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek said, there was a person who came to the Tzemach Tzedek once for an audience. He was a great Hasidic rabbi. And he said to the Rebbe, I have a really big problem. I have what we call sveikus in emunah. I've got doubts in my faith. So the Rebbe appeared not to even get surprised. He didn't care. And he said, okay. So the person thought, we know that normally faith becoming weakened, faith is our foundation, faith becoming weakened is a big problem. So he said to the Rebbe, he screamed out, Rebbe, maybe you didn't hear. You didn't hear what I said. Sveikus in emunah, I've got doubts in my faith. So Matzelik said, I see you're getting excited. That's okay. In other words, if it's bothering you, if you still have your faith, but you have questions, that's okay. You can get through that. You have to work through that. You just have to deal with it. You have to either by answering some of the questions or maybe not, as we'll see later. Maybe by just digging deeper and revealing a stronger dimension of faith, which, by the way, as we'll see later very strongly, does not mean answering questions all the time. So those three introductions, number one, definition of faith. Number two, that tragedy, suffering can often make faith struggle. And three, that faith and questions can certainly come together. So let's explore this and let's sort of unpack this and let's see how it develops in this chapter a little bit. So the author of the book, Ariel Berger, writes the following. He says that in the fall of 2006, and it was Professor Wiesel's classroom in Boston, and a student asked a question and it went like this. He said, how can we have faith, especially in God, after what happened? A ministry student named Philip asks in the class of Elie Wiesel's book, The Night, a famous book. And it was a class he was giving on that book. Now, who is this Philip? Philip, he says, is a stocky young man with an intense stare, a religious devout and devoted to an academic life and pastoral mission. However, he recently found out that his mother was Jewish and that as a child she'd survived the Holocaust, a secret she'd hidden from her family for years. The discovery had clearly shaken Philip's faith both in his mother and his religious identity. His question in that class was one on many students' minds as they encounter the whole howling void of the Holocaust. How can we live without faith? How can we live with faith? And so on. To which, in that class, Elie Wiesel responds with the following. And he says, we cannot understand that period. This is a very powerful response. I'm going to read it to you. He says like this. He says, we cannot understand that period with God or without God. Begins Professor Wiesel, looking around the room. His gaze settles on Philip. Believe me, Elie Wiesel says to Philip, if I had not had faith, my life would be much easier. My questions are questions only because of my faith. My argument with God is an argument only because of faith. Sometimes I have wished to renounce it, but I could not. This is a very, very powerful paragraph. It says many things. It says that faith doesn't mean we understand. And it also says that faith is something we have and not necessarily we can give up. And sometimes we'll be easier without faith. Not deeper, not better, not fulfilled, but easier. In other words, then we could just not worry of why things happen. And there wouldn't be any questions because everything's just incidental, everything's just random. But he says that he couldn't give up his faith and therefore he struggled and he had questions, which we'll see later. He had big ones. But he struggled and he had questions because of his faith. Now, I think we need to unpack that response a little bit. And I want to just digress now a little bit and talk about these two things, the definition of faith and the questions. So let's just understand what the definition of faith is. And you know, and also, I want to also connect it to how does faith impact our own personal growth? After all, Thursday morning is not a theological lesson. Thursday morning is a personal growth session. But I'm going through the books. I'm going through every chapter. But I really want to share with you that actually faith is directly connected, for a reason you'll soon see, to the concept of personal growth, real personal growth, that is. In fact, we are told, our rabbis tell us, that bizchut ha'emunah yatzu avoteinu mimitzrayim, that it was because of faith, in the merit of faith, that our Jews were freed from Egypt. On a simple level, what that means is that they had a mitzvah, faith, so therefore God redeemed them. But on a deeper level, perhaps it means that because they had faith, that's why they were able to become free. They were able to go beyond themselves. They were able to become untrapped, because faith and growth is really connected, as we'll soon see. So I'm going to share with you from many Jewish writings, just for a few moments, of what does faith actually mean. We call this in Hebrew emunah. What is it? We know it's central to Jewish existence, to Jewish experience, but what is it? When I say it's central, we have what's called belief in God, but we have more than that. We have what's called the 13 principles of faith laid out by Maimonides. And for those of you who, I was going to say, who go every Friday night to shul, but not now, but have gone or will go, please God, soon, would know that we sing, many, many shuls, they sing a song called Yigdal. And Yigdal has 13 paragraphs corresponding to the 13 principles of what we believe in fundamentally. So what we have to understand is the following. And please bear with me, and I hope it's going to be clear. Rational belief, meaning believing in something because it makes sense, and there are many things that could come from things that make sense. There are many logical and rational arguments to support the belief in God, to support the existence of God, to disprove randomness and disprove Darwinism on many levels and so on and so forth. That's all good, but actually it's not the real deep definition of faith. Why? Because when someone believes in something because they understand it, because it makes sense, then it's an untested faith. In other words, I believe in it because it makes sense to me. And I might be a very smart person. What happens if tomorrow someone smarter than me comes and gives a counter argument? Someone disproves that? So in other words, my faith is as big as my brain. That's not real faith. Faith is much stronger than that. Faith is as big as my intellect. So that's not real faith. That's not the definition, at least the Jewish definition, of faith. Secondly, we need to understand that not only is untested, but faith is much bigger than that, because faith connects us, listen carefully to this, faith connects us to something much higher than ourselves. If everything that I believe in is based on what I understand, then my belief in God is not believing in something drastically higher than me, but actually it's belief in a God that I designed for myself. It's my God. In other words, it's a God that I created, because the God that I understand, or the things that I believe in are things that I understand because they make sense to me. So it's something that I've created within myself. It's not a God that's higher than me. It's God that's within me that I designed. That's a very limited God, because I'm limited. True faith in the Jewish context, true emunah, is much higher, something higher than my understanding. Something beyond my comprehension. Something that transcends me and the world and the universe. Which is why, by the way, that the only way to really grow, and here goes to personal growth, the only way to really grow as a person is to go beyond ourselves. The only way to go beyond ourselves is to connect to something higher than ourselves. Which is why I say that emunah, faith in God, from a Jewish perspective, is so interwoven to the concept of personal growth, because if I only connect to meaning and purpose, but only the things I understand, only the things that talk to me, only the things that make sense to me, I never really grow, because I never really go beyond myself. Which this is connected to the whole concept of looking for a life of meaning which comes from an outside, higher source. The definition of morality, is morality just something I make up, or is there an absolute truth, is an absolute morality? From a Jewish perspective, if I believe in the Torah, and I believe in the Torah which is inseparable from God, which are both beyond me, drastically beyond me, way infinitely beyond me, then I can really grow, I can really go beyond myself. I wanted to share with you a couple of excerpts from a book of Rabbi Sacks called The Great Partnership, The Belief and Science, where he talks about the, not the birth, but the sort of the beginning of the development of the movement of monotheism started by our patriarch Abraham Avinu, Abraham. And he talks about the comparison between an atheistic view and a view of belief, which began with Abraham Avinu, who brought monotheism to the world, so to speak. I mean, it was always around from when Adam was created, but it died. I mean, it went away because of pagan worship, and Abraham reignited it. And he says the following, and I'll read you a few excerpts because it's so powerful, and he says it so much better than I could say. He says, these are two rival views. One asserts that life is meaningless. You see, without faith, life is an accident, which means that life has no meaning. The other, the claim of faith, claims that life is meaningful. And then he says, the search for God is the search for meaning. The discovery of God is the discovery of meaning. And it's no small thing, for we are meaning-seeking animals. That's what makes us unique. And then he continues and he says, and more bluntly, Steven Weinberg writes, the more the universe seems comprehensible, the more it seems pointless. If we can explain everything of how it happened and what happened, then it's pointless. If we have faith in something higher, then there's a search for meaning. And then he says, Rabbi Sacks goes on towards the end of that chapter, and he says the following. He quotes from some big philosopher, which I forgot his name, and he says, the meaning of the system, listen to this, it's very powerful. He says, the meaning of a system lies beyond the system, lies outside the system. You can't have the system and the system itself should create its own meaning. If you have a system and then you need to give meaning to that system, the meaning comes from something outside of that system. Therefore, the meaning of the universe lies outside the universe. That was the revolution of the Abrahamic monotheism. And then he says, and I'll just finish with this paragraph. He says, only something or someone outside the universe can give meaning to the universe. Only belief in a transcendental God who transcends us, can render human existence other than tragic. Individual lives, even within a tragically configured universe, may have meaning, but life as a whole does not. He said, take God out of the equation and we're left with unyielding despair. So Rabbi Sacks is saying very much the same thing, that emunah, faith, is about connecting or believing in something that transcends the human logic. It's about understanding that we are, it can be motivated by understanding, the understanding that we are limited, by understanding that it makes no sense to live a life that's meaningless, that makes no sense for us to create our own meaning within our own limited, finite existence, but rather that we have to connect to something higher. In other words, faith to a large degree needs and requires a certain surrender, to something which is beyond us, and to something which we don't always understand. I remember as a very young child, my father, blessed memory, would talk a lot about faith. And he would explain to me, he would give me this example from the Torah, and he would say, you know what faith means? And by the way, he was not someone that discouraged questioning, but he very much did it on the foundation of emunah and faith. And he would tell me, I remember this very, very clearly as a child, that he would tell me that if you look in the Torah, God said to Abraham, that I will create a nation through your son Isaac. And then later on, while Isaac was still single, he told him, Kahna et bincha, take your son and offer him up on the altar. That was the story of the binding on Isaac. Something that made absolutely no sense, something that was completely contradictory. And Abraham didn't flinch. He got up in the morning and he went, what's going to be with the previous promise of God? That's God's problem. He didn't understand, but he believed. Obviously, it all turned out okay. But he didn't understand, but he believed, because that's emunah. You know, it's interesting. I often talk to people, and this comes up particularly when I talk to a lot of people about, you know, mindfulness and about the Jewish view of meditation and so on and so forth. And I have a lot of people who obviously struggle with faith, and they tell me, you know, I don't really believe in God, but I believe in spirituality. I want to be spiritual, but I don't want to have God. Can you be spiritual without God in the picture? So what I tell them is, in fact, you could be spiritual without God. The problem is this, however. God is not physical, and actually God is not spiritual either. Because physicality, this is a deep Kabbalistic idea, but physicality and spirituality are both creations of God. Spirituality perhaps lends itself more to divine experience. But the spiritual also has its definition. It's also a creation. It's also something that God created. God transcends both the physical and the spiritual. So I said, We have within us a physical body. We are physical people. But then if we tap deeper, we have a spiritual part of us. But if you want to really go beyond yourself, if you want to really become free, if you really want to grow, then it's not enough to connect to spirituality. You have to connect to God. You have to believe in God and connect to Him. Because you've got to go completely beyond yourself. Beyond yourself means beyond your spiritual self as well. Which connects to something else that I want to bring up with faith before we go back to the book. So therefore, faith is something which is believing in something beyond ourselves. But faith is always also something which we believe that we have. We all have. Where does it live within us? So we've talked a lot about the layers of the soul. So we have our behavior layer. We have our emotional. We have our cognition. We have, in other words, our consciousness. Our intellectual self. The conscious self. We all have a spark of faith deep down. It lives deep down. It lives in the core of our soul. There's a saying from the Talmud, Yisrael ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. The Jewish people are believers, the children of believers. Not always they admit it. Not always they acknowledge it. But I'm from the firm believer in this. That every person, I can tell you so many stories about where you see the faith of a person coming out, even a person who doesn't believe. Maybe I'll tell you at the end some of these stories maybe next week. But it's incredible. Every soul has at its core a spark of faith. But that core, where that spark believes, is in the super-rational. It's in the super-rational part of who we are. It's in the subconscious, in the very depth of our soul. We just need to bring it out and reveal it, perhaps, on all levels. Which is why, by the way, that because emunah, because faith, is about something which is beyond us, that's why in Jewish tradition, we create the foundation of faith in very young children. You know, Brit Milah, circumcision, is 8 days old. We tell stories of the Torah with its miracles long before a child can actually fully comprehend things. Because questioning is not a problem, but the foundation is faith. And therefore we talk about faith first, and then we build everything else on that foundation. So let's go back to the book for a moment on that introduction. Because I want to obviously extend this and try and understand how faith works with questioning or how faith works with challenging. So let's get a flavor for how this worked in Elie Wiesel's life. But first, to give up a bit of background, as the book does. So Elie Wiesel himself, before the war, actually grew up in a very, very religious family. A family that were Hasidim of Vizhnitz, the great Vizhnitzer Rebbe, the pre-war Vizhnitzer Rebbe. And the book says, growing up, Eliezer, as he was called, Wiesel was pious. Filled with fervor of a child's simple faith, he spent his days studying the Torah texts, pining for God, praying for Mashiach to come, and so on and so forth. He was a child, he played, he did all the things other children do, but he was part of a very, very faith-based family in a more revealed way, right? He says, the spiritual life of his community revolved around the Jewish calendar, the synagogue, the study hall, and the Hasidic rebbes who lived nearby. Every day, Eliezer woke early, walked to the study hall, put on his tefillin, and davened and prayed. Now, he writes an interesting story. He says Eliezer's grandfather was a follower of the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, known for his love of people, and the young boy occasionally traveled with his mother or grandfather to see the master. I'm not sure why he doesn't mention his father. Maybe his father wasn't alive. I'm not sure. Anyway, he says, the author writes, in a class one day, he tells a story about one of these visits. He says, while I was very young, my mother took me to see the Vizhnitzer Rebbe. Usually it was my grandfather who brought me, listen to the story, because I'm only going to tell you half the story now, you'll see why. He says, usually it was my grandfather who brought me, but this time I went with my mother. The Rebbe smiled at me and asked me questions about my studies, about the Talmud, about the commentaries that I was studying and learning. After we spoke for a while, he asked me to wait outside while he talked to my mother. I waited for half an hour. And when my mother came out, she was crying. Why are you crying, Mama? I asked. But she refused to tell me. I wondered, had I disappointed the Rebbe? Did I do something wrong? Though I asked her again and again, she refused to explain. I learned the answer only years later. But I'm not going to tell you just yet, said Elie Wiesel. Several students protested and demanded to know, and he said, no, you will have to wait, as I had to wait. I will tell you on the last day of the class. Now, I'm going to do what he did, and for a reason which you'll see at the end, I'm going to actually not tell you what the end of the story was. I'll tell you towards the end of this class. Okay? This session. So keep the story in your mind and we'll come back to it at the end. Now, as I said, emunah is something which is instilled in a child. It was instilled in his childhood through the environment, through his studying, through the Hasidic connection, through his whole experience. And when that emunah, when that faith is instilled in a child or instilled in everyone, it's there anyway. It remains there. We cannot really divorce ourselves from that faith. What we do need to do, and this is, by the way, for all of us, even if we consider ourselves big believer, in Hasidic philosophy, there's an incredible phenomenon that's brought. And it goes like this. I think it's a quote from the Zohar, I'm not sure, but it goes like this. It says that you have to be careful about faith because sometimes a thief could, on the way to breaking into a house, he stops at the door and he asks God to make him successful, that he should steal well, he should rob well. What does that mean? It means he believes in God, right? But because belief, by definition, as we said before, is super rational and it lives in the subconscious of our soul, the work that we have to do is to reveal it, and the work that we have to do is to internalize it, that it actually flows over and impacts everything we do. See, the gunner, the thief, believes in God, but he hasn't internalized it. He has cognitive dissonance. He believes in God, but he forgot on a conscious level that God doesn't want him to steal. So he's going to steal anyways. And he says, oh, please God, make me successful. That's not good. Faith is, by definition, super rational. But faith has to be brought into the rational. It needs to be something which we think about, which goes into our consciousness, which goes something that we question and we ask and we explain and we understand and we try as best we can to have it part of every part of us, including the consciousness of who we are. Which is why, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're coming up to Shavuot. Shavuot, the people of Israel got the Torah, and one of the famous phrases, right? One of the famous phrases of Shavuot is that the Jews responded to God, and they said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and then we will hear. And there's many explanations on that, and I don't want to go into it in too much depth, but essentially, Na'aseh and Nishma is exactly this. Na'aseh is surrender. We're going to do whatever you say. We don't understand. We do understand. We are yours. We believe in you. We accept you. And we're going to do whatever you tell us to do. But they didn't just say Na'aseh. The Jews were praised for prefacing their obedience, their compliance, their surrender first. But they followed it with another word. They said, V'nishma, we will learn. We will understand. Because Na'aseh without Nishma is no good. Na'aseh must come first. Na'aseh must be the foundation. But Na'aseh must then travel into Nishma. It must be internalized. It must be absorbed. It must be thought about. But when you think about it, that's where the questions come. And that's okay. Because it's okay to question. So what does it look like? How does faith and questions coexist? What does faith look like when we have questions? What does faith look like when faith is challenged? What does it look like when it's what Elie Wiesel calls wounded faith? Right? So we know that Elie Wiesel struggled back and forth, as we see in the book and in other books. After the war, Elie Wiesel really struggled with faith. He struggled with faith back and forth in his own particular way. Other people expressed their struggles in a different way. But let's have a look at a few excerpts from this chapter and just get a glimpse and a feeling of what that struggle looked like. So first of all, he says, and I'm reading you from the way the author puts it, he says, but in class on a cloudy November day, Professor Wiesel tells his students, even there, meaning the camps, I prayed. I remember one day someone managed to smuggle tefillin into the camp by bribing a couple with bread and margarine. My father and I woke up early and stood in line with many others to put them on. We weren't obligated to put them on in the camps, so it was very dangerous. And yet the Jews risked their lives to perform this commandment, and I prayed. I could pray there. If I could pray there, it is possible to pray under any circumstances. Does it mean the prayers were answered? No, they weren't. Of course not. My father died, so many died. But the prayers were prayers nonetheless. Even an unanswered prayer is prayer. So that same student, Philip, says to him, how could you do it? How could you find it in yourself to pray? He says, it's a good question. He says, I thought about it. Is it really possible? In Auschwitz, is it possible? As I said, we cannot conceive of that place with God or without God. It is impossible to pray, but I did. And I said that prayer because my father said it. his father, his grandfather. How could I be the last? In other words, he acknowledges the fact that the faith remains with you, whether you have questions or not, whether you struggle or not. On the other hand, we see from the writing and from the different excerpts of the chapter that his faith did change after the war, and it was challenged, even though it remained, right? He says, caught between the impossibility of maintaining the faith of his childhood and the inability to renounce it entirely, says the author, Wiesel sought a new kind of faith. Over time, it became something else, an angry faith, an activist faith, a faith with teeth, as he calls it. And Elie Wiesel himself went on to say that there was a great philosopher who wrote that faith must be lost and found again. But he said, I replace the word lost with wounded. And that's where Elie Wiesel came up with this idea of a wounded faith. He came up with this idea because he couldn't renounce his faith, but yet he couldn't accept it completely. So he called it a wounded faith. Now, I think, and I'm going to submit to you, again, without any judgment of his own struggles, but I submit to you that faith doesn't have to be wounded. And in fact, with many people, and many people after the war, it wasn't wounded. In fact, it became stronger. But I do believe that faith can be challenged. And faith and challenge can coexist on many levels. And faith can be questioned. And that can be coexist on many levels. Sometimes the outcome could be wounded. Sometimes the outcome can be actually stronger. So let's understand how it all works. So we all have questions, right? To have questions on faith is not an abnormal thing. We all have that. I mean, everyone has questions. Do we understand what's going on? Can we explain things? Do we understand if we believe, if we have real faith and we believe that everything comes from God, can we explain why God would want to put us quarantined at home now for so long? Why do you allow this plague to happen? I have no idea. It's a question that I have. It's a hard question to understand because it undermines God's various principles. He wants us to daven in shul and we can't. He wants us to do certain mitzvot that we can't do now. Right? Why does he do it? I don't know. There's questions. Sometimes we read in the Chumash, we read in the Bible, as Elie Wiesel likes to teach himself, that questions become, and especially with great people, we find that questions actually took the form of challenge. Avraham Avinu, our patriarch Abraham, challenged God. He challenged him strongly. When was that? When he was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And God communicated with Abraham what he was going to do. And Abraham took on God. And he said, how can you do this? Maybe there's some good people there. Maybe if you can find 45 people, 30 people, 10 people. And he challenged God. But he never stopped believing in God. On the contrary, his challenge came from faith. Because he believed so much that everything is in God's control. So he was challenging him. He was saying, I don't understand how you can do this. I have a question. On my conscious level, it's a question. Moses challenged God. Moses, when God told him to go to Egypt and to free the Jewish people, and then for a time being temporarily, Pharaoh made it worse. He came back to God and he said, why did you do this to us? Why? The Radak, a 12th century commentator on Tanakh, quotes a midrash that says in the time of King David, there was a punishment, there was a plague that happened, and he quotes, why did it happen to the Jewish people? Because in King David's time, there was not yet a temple. God had not allowed the temple to be built, and the people should have challenged God. They should have demanded that we want a temple. Why don't you sit back and say no? You know, if God wants it to happen, it will happen. You see, we need to understand a very important thing. Even from the way we pray, we can see that we have questions. What does that mean? You see, faith means we don't understand. So what does it mean? There's a really important point. So if something happens, we have emunah. If God forbid something happens that's negative, our faith allows us to accept it, to say that we don't understand why God does certain things, nor should we understand, we're not supposed to understand, but we believe God is beyond us, he's transcendent, he's outside of the system, he sees a different picture, he sees a bigger picture, he knows what he's doing. Ultimately, everything's for the good, we just don't understand it. That's painful. It's painful. We accept that it's painful. There's Jewish laws of how to grieve and feel pain and loss, but emunah. Yet it's interesting, at the same time, we pray. And the definition of prayer, by the way, in the Talmud, is something we call bakashat tzrachav. We ask for our needs. Now, when we daven the Amidah, when we say the Amidah, we turn to God and we say, could you please keep us healthy? Or if someone is sick, could you please make him better? Someone is having financial challenges. Could you please give them money? Someone's having a difficulty finding a shidduch. Could you please help them? Right? What are we saying? We're saying to God, could you please change status quo? Could you please change what's happening? How does it actually work? So I have a cousin. His name is also Gerari, Nussi Gerari, an older cousin, who as a young student had a very close connection with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he told me once that he was in an audience, with a private audience with the Rebbe. And he asked him the following question. He used to ask the Rebbe questions that came up in learning. And he said to him, how does Emunah go with davening, with prayer? He said to him, if I accept that everything comes from God, even though I don't understand it, and the Emunah is based that God is beyond me, and God is something that's transcendent, and God tells me, not always I understand what's good for me, and God gives me challenges, but ultimately He knows what He's doing. If He knows what He's doing, why am I trying to change it? Why am I asking for it to change? Why am I asking to get better? Why am I asking for the difficulty to go away? If God thinks this is good for me, then it's good for me. So it's a paradoxical theological issue. And the Rebbe said to him the following. God put us in a context of what things that we understand. Obviously, when He sends us things, total surrender, total emunah, total acceptance and belief that was happened till now is for our benefit, it's for our good, and we have to just accept it. With strength, with resilience. And when by the way, I say it's like as if it's easy. It's not easy at all, especially when there's challenge. But that's what we have to do as Jews, especially. However, God created us not to understand certain things, and He wants us to operate within the context of our intellect. And therefore, when we come to Him and we pray, and He asks us and He says to us, you need to pray to me to ask for what you need. You need to ask for what you need, how you understand need. We understand need differently, and God is infinite. God is omnipresent and omnipotent. He can do whatever He wants. He can give us the benefit a different way. He can give us the benefit in the good way that we understand to be good. So we don't have a choice. We can only talk to God in our language. We can accept what God sends us, but going forward, we can only talk to God and even sort of subtly challenge God, so to speak. I understand that until yesterday there was a challenge, but today I want it to go away because I don't understand anything else. And that's the brain you gave me, that's the intellect you gave me, and that's the context which you told me to work with. So the two things go together. In fact, we find an amazing thing. I'm not sure challenging God in an angry way is a sort of a recipe for every person, but we do find in the Torah that the greater the people, the greater the personalities, the stronger they were able to challenge God, so to speak. Moses, the greatest believer, challenged God. Abraham, the founder of the monotheistic movement, so to speak, you could say, challenges God. I've often spoken about someone that I just always am always overwhelmed by his stories, and that's the Kloisenberger Rebbe. The Kloisenberger Rebbe went through the war, and I've spoken to you about this. The Kloisenberger went through the war, and he lost. He was a great Rebbe before the war, and he lost a wife and 11 children. He came out of the war with such strong emunah. He built two major Hasidic centers in New Jersey and in Israel. He didn't just spread Torah and Judaism. He built a hospital, the famous Leonardo Hospital in Netanya today. He was fire in helping people, fire in serving God, fire in learning Torah and bringing back faith and resilience and strength to the Jewish people. And yet, there are many recorded speeches of his where he turns his attention to God and he challenges God. He asks God, he demands God, you've got to make it good for the people. We had enough curses, we had enough problems, enough challenges. Now it's time to make it good. And the two things that were not a problem. Why? Because on the contrary, he didn't understand, but his faith was so strong that he could challenge. The stronger your faith is, the more you can challenge. And these contradictions, the stuff that we don't understand, the challenges that we have, the questions that we have, or even the challenges that we have sometimes, can coexist with faith. And I want to just share with you an amazing story that he brings in the chapter. I've heard it before, but it's a well-known story, but it's a beautiful story. And just to demonstrate what faith really is. There was a story of a few people in one of the concentration camps during the war that on one of the particular days, things were a bit relaxed that day because it was some sort of public holiday and the German guards were not so focused on being so strict. And the kind of was a couple of hours of relative relaxing. And a bunch of Jews were sitting there and they were thinking to themselves, and some, they were, I guess, religious Jews from before the war, I don't know exactly. But they came up with this plan, like, what are we doing here? Why is this happening? And they decided that they're going to call God to a Din Torah. They're going to call God to a Bet Din. They're going to make a Bet Din there in the camp. And they're going to summon God to the Bet Din. And they did. And they had one person represent God and the other person represent the Jewish nation. And there were three judges. And, you know, the person representing the Jewish people summons God. Why did you do this? This has to end. Why are you doing it? And so on and so forth. And a bit of discussion, deliberation. I'm not sure exactly how the process went. And then it was time to the three judges to issue their verdict. The three judges look up and they say, we've heard the two sides of the story. God has lost the case. He is wrong and he shouldn't be doing this. And as they said it, one of them looked up to a setting sun as it was beginning to get dark and he says, Oy vey, it's late. It's time to daven mincha. That's emunah. They had the question. They prayed to God, it should go away. We can only work with things that we understand. We can accept that we don't understand everything. Things that have happened to us till now, we just have to accept with the most resilience of an emunah and strength and give it as much meaning as we possibly can. That's how we know how to deal with challenge. We have the question, we don't know the answer, nor should we. By the way, we should not ever try to explain things we don't understand, meaning things that are beyond our comprehension. We should try to understand as much as we can about God, about the Torah, about emunah and so on, but we should never try to understand suffering and tragedy in the face of emunah, because emunah and understanding are two different things. And in fact, when we try to explain tragedy, we're almost justifying tragedy. And God doesn't want us to justify tragedy. He does what he needs to do, but he wants us to do what we need to do. But at the same time, the emunah doesn't go away. The emunah can be strong. The faith can be as strong as ever. The people in the concentration camp can look up and say, God has lost the case, but we need to daven mincha. So far, just before we take it to the last part, in summary, emunah is something we need to develop. Emunah, faith, is something we all have. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to want to understand things we can understand, we should understand. Things that we shouldn't understand, we need to not understand, but use emunah to support us. And it's even okay to challenge. But I guess, in summary, when we talk about challenge, challenge must come because of faith, not to weaken the faith. Sometimes people challenge because they are looking for excuse not to believe. We need to challenge because of faith, not to undermine our faith and not to weaken our faith. Because, as we said, there's so many things we don't understand. And we can ask the question, but the question comes from faith, not to weaken the faith. So, everyone struggles in their way, and struggling is okay. Like the Tzemach Tzedek said, as long as we hold on to our faith, as long as it bothers us, as long as we struggle, that struggling is a good thing because it means with faith we have, the faith doesn't seem to match up with layers of our understanding. So let's go now to the end of the story. Right? The end of the story. Because Elie Wiesel was someone who definitely struggled with his faith. He writes so much about it. It affected him after the war. It affected his religious observance, without a question. And yet, even him, with the horrors that he saw, ultimately admitted, acknowledged, explained many, many times, I've just quoted a few times, that he never lost his faith. And I want to tell you two things. The first thing I want to tell you is the end of the story. The end of the story is, remember that story? He went with his mother to the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, who tested him and spoke to him and then asked him to leave the room, and then his mother, half an hour later, came out and she was crying. So I'm going to read you the end of the story. So the end of the story goes like this. This is the way the author describes it. He says, during the final meeting of his course on Hasidism, Professor Wiesel leads the usual open class in which the students are invited to ask questions and so on. Finally, Jane, an educator who audits Wiesel's class every other year or so, raises her hand and says, can you tell us the rest of the story? Which story? He asks, smiling. He knows which one. The story about the Vizhnitzer Rebbe and your mother crying. Ah, yes, he says, I owe you that ending, don't I? And so he tells us, and I'm going to read it to you because it's written so beautifully. You remember that after she met with the Rebbe, my mother was in tears and would not tell me why. Many years later, when I was already living in New York, I received an urgent message from a doctor in Florida. My cousin was in the hospital and refused to go into surgery without my blessing. That's Elie Wiesel's blessing. The doctor was calling me to convey my cousin's request. I was surprised that my cousin was asking for me. But naturally I obliged and I said the special prayer for healing to give him that blessing. Right? A few days later, my cousin was recovering and he called and asked me to come and see him as soon as possible. So I traveled to Florida to the hospital and I went to see him. I asked him, why me? Why was it so important that I say the prayer? He looked at me and said, do you remember when you were a boy? your mother took you to see the vision of Tzereba? I said, of course. He said, maybe you were too young to remember, but I was there. Do you ever wonder why your mother was crying after she spoke to the Rebbe alone? I said, of course, I wondered my whole life. Why, do you know? He said, yes. Then he told me. I was in the room waiting to meet with the Rebbe. He spoke with delight of your studies and told your mother that you were doing very well. Then he closed his eyes. Now you have to understand, the Vision Rebbe was a very saintly person. Then he closed his eyes and he said to your mother that you would become a great man among the Jewish people. But the Rebbe went on, neither you or I will live to see it. Jane voices what so many of us are thinking. What does that story mean to you? And listen to what Elie Wiesel says. It means that although the world of my childhood is lost, it is still with me. And that the Rebbe's blessing and my mother's tears go together, as blessings and tears often do. It means that faith can coexist with tragedy, can survive it, and that we carry it with us in spite of, or perhaps because of, our wounds. And that's how he finished. And that's being said by someone who wasn't shy about the fact that he clearly struggled with his faith because of his experience, something we can never understand and we can never fathom. But at the same time, it powerfully, powerfully expresses the concept that faith is something, number one, that it doesn't go together with explanation. It coexists with question. That faith is something that we all have. Faith is something that we cannot renounce. The Jews in the camp can say God is wrong, but still daven mincha. Elie Wiesel can say, sometimes I wish I didn't have faith because it would be easier, but he says he cannot do that. So the challenge for us is to understand that. The challenge for us, and I think the takeaway for this, is to understand it. Faith is something we all have, whether we like it or not. You know, we have a few minutes. I'll tell you two stories about how every Jew really believes. You know, I was a student once in Melbourne. Before I got married, I was a student in Melbourne for a year and a half. And I had to spend Rosh Hashanah in Tasmania to help out there, a very fledgling Jewish community. And I took a taxi. I was a young kid of, I don't know, 18 years old or something. 19 years old, whatever it was. And I was in a taxi, and it was a Russian guy. And he started hammering me. You know, normally you take a taxi driver, you want it just to be peaceful. This guy, you could see, I kind of look religious, I guess, and he starts hammering me. That he grew up in communist Russia, you know, they indoctrinated them with anti-religion. He said, I don't believe in anything, it's nothing. It's like, I don't believe. And he's hucking me, and I actually don't know what to do. I wasn't that experienced, and I had no idea what to tell him. I could see arguing with him is not going to help. He'll probably chuck me out of the taxi. And I really wanted to get to the airport on time, or early, as my nature is, as you probably know. And he's hucking and hucking. So I said to him, I don't know why this came to my mind. I said to him, what happens if someone would call you a dirty Jew? So he looks at me as he's driving, and in his thick Russian accent, he says to me, I kill him. So I said, okay, so you do believe. In other words, you can't really divorce yourself from who you are. There's layers and layers and layers on top of your faith that is hiding it. But every one of us believes. I remember having a discussion with someone who came to me with a real problem. Someone who had been trying to engage in some sort of Jewish experience for a long time. And had nothing of it. I don't really believe, and I don't really accept, and I don't really nothing, you know. I say, I'm not trying to convert you. I'm just trying to, you know, engage a little bit with who you are. Engage with your faith a little bit. Just experience a little bit. Come to something. He says, no. And then he came to see me with a huge problem about a cousin of his or something that was dying and wanted to be cremated, and he wasn't. And he says, how can it be they're Jewish and they need to be buried, and how can it? And he's going on and on, and he's devastated. And I asked him, well, why are you so devastated? So he says, I don't know. I said, I'll tell you why. Because you really do believe. You are who you are. The pintalayid, the faith, the spark of Jewishness that we have, the spark of belief that we have within ourselves is within every single one of us. But we struggle with it sometimes. Sometimes it's hidden. Sometimes we don't learn enough about it. Sometimes we don't understand enough about our own Jewish heritage and belief system, or what is it that we really believe in. So we need to study. We need to internalize. We need to develop. We need to nurture our faith. And then when we do nurture our faith and we try to understand some things, we throw in a curveball and we have questions. That's fine too. We all have questions. Sometimes we struggle with our faith. That's also okay. Sometimes we want to express the question, and sometimes we even want to express a little bit of anger. I often tell people when they I've had people come to me and talk to me and say, I don't know what to do. I'm feeling, you know, they lost a loved one. I'm feeling angry with God. I say, that's good. It means you have a relationship with Him. You don't get angry with someone who doesn't exist. Right? Now, we need to deal with that, obviously. I don't think anger with God is a good thing, but nevertheless, it's part of the process sometimes. Right? So therefore, we have questions, and that's okay. But we have questions because we have faith. Elie Wiesel said this so clearly. He said that my childhood is no longer here, but it's his childhood, meaning his childhood of faith, is no longer here, but it's still within me. Faith and tears can coexist. Faith and good times can coexist. Faith is something that should encompass us and accompany with us wherever we are. And as I said before earlier, and this is a personal growth class, the truth is that the only real pathway to real personal growth is faith. Is going beyond ourselves, is realizing that we are limited, we are finite, we are mortal. We are locked in ourselves, and the only way to unlock ourselves completely is not just to grow within ourselves. It's not to create morals and a God that we understand so it fits into our context, to our paradigm, so that's it's the God that we created. It's something outside the system, as Rabbi Sacks says, something we need to learn to connect to, something that we are able to surrender to when we need. And that faith is something that can carry us. If we understand this, then even when we are thrown challenges, even when we go through a difficult time, there is pain and there is questions, but actually we can draw on the depth of our faith to give us strength, to give us resilience, and to give meaning to what we are experiencing. Will it help us understand? No, not always. Sometimes it shouldn't. Will it help us strengthen? Yes, it will. Will it help us become stronger and grow as people? Yes, it will. Will it help us give meaning to what we're going through? That's what it's supposed to do. So our challenge, our task, our opportunity is to realize that we have the faith which is so beautifully expressed in the very beginning of each day when we say Mode'ani. Mode'ani, that's it. That's the statement of faith. It's a statement of gratitude, but it's gratitude to a God that has given us back our soul. It's an acknowledgement of our soul that harbors at its very deepest level the faith in God. And that's the statement of faith. That's the acknowledgement. Our job throughout the day is to nurture that faith, to take care of it, to reveal it, to internalize it, so we don't become like the thief. Because we all do this on some level. We do things we know we shouldn't do, but we still believe in God, right? But we shouldn't become like the thief who, at the threshold of him robbing a bank, he offers our prayer to God. But we should try and nurture it and try to have it inspire us and guide us and infiltrate every single part of who we are, so we live by its morals, we live by its values, we live according to that faith in God, and when it gets challenged, it's strong enough to withstand or to thrive, as Elie Wiesel puts it at the end, to thrive the challenge. The challenge might be there, the suffering might be there, the pain might be there, the question might be there, but the emunah, the faith, supports us, strengthens us, and thrives even beyond the challenge and coexists with it. So I hope that was clear, and I wish you all a very, very good day. I'll just unmute you all, and just be very well and have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay. All the best, everyone. Thank you, all the best. Bye-bye. I'm going to go now.